Hello and welcome to this presentation of the pageant for the inauguration of the new Lord Mayor on the 29th of October 1591. This time it's a member of the London Salters Company, the Right Honourable William Webb. The device of the pageant, given the fancy title of Descensus Astraea, or The Descent of Astraea, was written by George Peel. George also wrote the earliest extant Lord Mayor show in 1585, and probably several in between. 1585 we have previously covered, as we have also the previous year's show from 1590. Have a gander up the podcast feed. 1590 actually is quite helpful for this one, but doesn't matter. Unlike the show of 1585, where we had a wealth of material from eyewitnesses and the text, here all we have is the text itself, and there isn't a lot of it. Similarly, the recordings have been pulled together roughly as part of other recording sessions, so there is a certain discontinuity of voices. However, I hope we give an idea of the sense of the text and the occasion that has come down to us. After the text itself, there is a recording of our initial exploring session with Professor Tracy Hill, our regular city chronologer. This exploring session was recorded with the 1585 and 90 pageants and is available as a long player on our YouTube channel, links in the show description. So, it is the 29th of October 1591. The new Lord Mayor is about to be officially sworn in. In the morning, the livery companies and other official-type people gather at the Guildhall in London. William Webb is led by this procession south to the Thames, down to Three Cranes, where he is met in this pageant by a sea nymph who makes a speech before he gets on a barge to be taken to Westminster to be sworn in. There might have been more of a water show at the side of the Thames there with this nymph, but we have no official data to work from. The nymph does talk about London. It could just be gesturing out to the city itself, or there could be a pageant literally depicting the city itself, which is part of the display. We have had depictions of London itself in other Lord Mayor shows, but we don't actually know. Music would be playing, cannons firing, and a small flotilla of boats would leave with him on his journey. After being sworn in, he returns to the City of London, arriving somewhere near Paul's Stairs, west of where he got on at the barges at Three Cranes, and so he heads up to the precincts of St. Paul's. From there is the long road of Cheapside, the widest street in the city, which he will process along to reach the Guildhall again, one big long circle. Somewhere along Cheapside, the following performance occurred, and the pageant centres on Astraea, a nymph, daughter of Jove, also known as other things like Justice, Pandora, Zebetta, and most pertinently for here, Eliza. For Astraea is a very common sobriquet for the Queen, Elizabeth, in the literature of the time. So Elizabeth was sent to the earth to deliver the English from peril. Sent by God, primarily against the Spanish, who only a few years earlier were vanquished. She encounters various virtues who help project her power and protect a fountain, which is symbolic here of England and its great abundance and probably the Thames, and they suppress the bad characters of superstition and ignorance, who are a friar and a priest, who would harm the country and literally kill the Queen. And we are only a few years after the Spanish Armada, so this isn't quite paranoia. The commentary that I've supplied is mostly inferred and in some places possibly inaccurate, and only presented here to try and explicate the text as it comes to us. Whilst Cheapside has a number of convenient positions to present material, this pageant is mostly set in one place, and so I have placed it at the Cross, which is about halfway along Cheapside. I recall that there are other options and layouts for this pageant. The text seems to be out of order. The last speech in the text looks like it should have been spoken at the beginning of the event, but there are possibilities that might contradict that. With a few exceptions, any of the description of what the device looks like, as spoken by myself, is inferred from the text, but there are a number of areas that might be overreach, and so take anything I say with a pinch of salt, and write angry letters if you disagree. And now, over to John, who has a very familiar voice, for the device of the pageant of 1591. Hello and welcome to this special live broadcast of the Lord Mayor's Show of the year of our Lord 1591. And the soon-to-be Lord Mayor, Sir William Webb, makes his way to the waterside for the journey to Westminster. With him is his predecessor in the job, Sir Roland Heywood, an interim Lord Mayor, after the sad passing last month on the 17th of September of Sir John Allott, who we saw sworn in at last year's Lord Mayor's Show. Sir Roland Heywood is a safe pair of hands who was previously Lord Mayor in 1570 and will hand over to the new Lord Mayor this morning. But before the new Lord Mayor gets onto his barge, we have a special speech on the water. It's a water nymph who will praise the great city of London, New Troy, on the banks of the Thames. And very jolly it looks too.
List, gentle lord, and bubbling stream be still, and whistling winds your angry murmur cease. Let Thetis nymph unfold the goddess test. Behold, embarked thus bravely as you see, laden with treasure and with precious ore, from where in Tellus veins the parting sun doth gold and glittering minerals create. Are come these strangers lovingly inflamed to gratulate to you, my lovely lord, this gladsome day wherein your honours spring. And by the bar that thwarts this silver stream, even to the beauteous verge of Troy no vent, that decks this Thames on either side. Thus far these friends have pierced, and all by me salute your honour and your company. Thrice worthy praetor of this ancient town, the mortar of these walls, tempered in peace, yet holds the building sure, as are the sprigs woven from the spreading root in knotty box. Labour, fair lord, as other mayors of yore, to beautify this city with deserts. So with these friendly strangers, man by man, pass with advisement to receive thy oath. Keep it inviolate for thy sovereign's hope, virtue's pure mirror, London's great mistress. Unsheathe the sword committed to thy sway, with merciful regard of every cause. So, go in peace, happy by sea and land, guided by grace and heaven's immortal hand.
And on cue the cannons roar as the Lord Mayor and the procession of barges make their way to Westminster. The nymph reminding the Lord Mayor that the oath he's to take at Westminster must be kept inviolate. And while the Lord Mayor goes to take his oath, here's a word from our sponsor, the Queen's Men, official players to Our Majesty, Queen Elizabeth.
Yet death, sweet death, my latest friend hath sworn to make a bargain for my lasting fame. And this, I this very day, I hope with this lame hand of mine to rake out that hateful heart of Richmond, and when I have it, to eat it, panting hot with salt, and drink his blood lukewarm, though I be sure 'twill poison me. Sirs, you that be resolute, follow me. The rest, go hang yourselves.
Richard III, valiantly minded, but tyrannous in authority.
Welcome back to Dissensus Astraea, the device of a pageant born before William Webb, written once again by Lord Mayor Show regular George Peel.
The Lord Mayor has returned from his swearing-in at Westminster and alighted at Paul's Stairs. The procession has made its way up to the precincts of St. Paul's and are now approaching the device on Cheapside. The device is a large structure created at the cross midway along Cheapside. It's a wedding cake-style scaffold with a stair at the top and widening out at different levels below, including other allegorical figures and also classical representations. Below her, on this hilltop, is a fountain presented most cunningly by our London artificers. But before the Lord Mayor reaches the pageant, we have the approach of a presenter who will introduce the device to Sir William Webb.
See, lovely lords, and you, my lord, behold how time hath turned his restless wheel about, and made the silver moon and heaven's bright eye gallop the zodiac and end the year, whose revolution now begets anew the days that have created and confirmed a worthy governor for London's good to underbear. Under his sovereign sway and partial justice beam, and weaved a web for your content, and her command in all. You, citizens of this metropolis, whose honour and whose oath to gratulate, lordings, behold what emblem I present. Astraea, daughter of the immortal Jove, oh, great Jove, defender of this ancient town, descended of the Trojan Brutus line, offspring of that courageous conquering king whose pure renown hath pierced the world's large ears in golden scrolls rolling about the heavens. Celestial sacred nymph that tends her flock with watchful eyes and keeps this fountain peace, guarded with graces and with gracious trains, virtues divine and gifts incomparable. Nor let blind superstitious ignorance corrupt so pure a spring. Oh, happy times that do beget such calm and quiet days, where sheep and shepherd breathe in such content. Honor attends her throne. In her bright eyes sits majesty. Virtue and steadfastness possess her heart. Sweet mercy sways her sword. Her champion, armed with resolution, sits at her feet to chastise malcontents that threat her honor's rack. And time and kind produce her years to make them numberless, while fortune for her service and her sake with golden hands doth strengthen and enrich the web that they for fair Astraea weave. Long may she live. Long may she govern us in peace triumphant, fortunate in wars. Our fair Astraea, our Pandora fair, our fair Eliza, our Zabetta fair. Sweet Cynthia's darling, beauteous Cypria's peer, as dear to England and true English hearts as Pompey to the citizens of Rome, as merciful as Caesar in his might, as mighty as the Macedonian king, or Trojan Hector terror to the Greeks. Goddess, live long, whose honors we advance, strengthen thy neighbors, propagate thine own. Guide well thy helm, lay thine anointed hand to build the temple of triumphant truth, that while thy subjects draw their peace from thee, thy friends with aid of arms may suckled be.
And that was the presenter of the pageant, introducing to us Astraea, who with her sheep hook stands on the top of the pageant. And it's Astraea, a personification of our noble prince, Queen Elizabeth, who speaks first.
Feed on, my flock, among the gladsome green, where heavenly nectar flows above the banks. Such pastures are not common to be seen. Pay to immortal Jove immortal thanks. For what is good from heaven's high throne doth fall, and heaven's great architect be praised for all.
But below Astraea on the pageant are figures working against her. It's superstition and ignorance, dressed as a friar and a priest respectively, and they are sitting by the fountain. The friar, Superstition, speaks first.
Stir, priest, and with thy beads poison this spring. I tell thee all is baneful that I bring.
It is in vain. Her eye keeps me in awe, whose heart is purely fixed on the law. The holy law, and bootless we contend, while this chaste nymph, this fountain, doth defend.
The fountain at the heart of the pageant is protected from superstition and ignorance by our nymph Astraea, who champions various muses in this her land. Euphrosyne, Agalia, and Thalia speak next.
Whilom when Saturn's golden reign did cease, and Iron Age had kindled cruel wars, envy in wrath perturbing common peace, engendering cankered hate and bloody jars. Lo, then Olympus' king, the thundering Jove, wrought hence this gracious nymph, Astraea fair. Now once again he sends her from above, descended through the sweet transparent air. And here she sits in beauty fresh and sheen, shadowing the person of a peerless queen.
A peerless queen, a royal princely dame, enrolled in register of eternal fame.
The graces throw their balm about her sacred head, whose government her realm's true happiness hath bred.
And now a selection of allegorical figures speak about how Astraea defends our land from Catholic Spain. Sorry, from the forces of ignorance and superstition. Charity, hope, faith, and honour speak.
That happiness continue in her land, great Israel's God, spring of all heavenly peace, and let thine angels in her rescue stand, with her life's wane done England's joys decrease. Oh, let her princely days never have fine, whose virtues are immortal and divine.
Such virtues as her throne do beautify, and make her honors mount and scale the sky, where hope of her eternal bliss doth rest, conceived in her sweet and sacred breast.
With radiant beams reflecting on the earth, even from the snowy brows of Albion, beyond the utmost verge of Christendom, as bright as is the burning lamp of heaven, shineth my mistress Honor, in whose fame the heathen carols sing, and all admire, from icy Tenaeus to the sevenfold Nile, her glory that commands this western isle.
The snowy brows of Albion. Wonderful words from George Peel there, spoken by Honour after charity, hope, and faith. Now, there is a champion who is in place to protect the fountain, who will be menaced by two malcontents. Now, don't worry, dear listeners. We think this champion is more than a match for them.
In whose defense my colors I advance, and girt me with my sword and shake my lance. These British lions rampant in this field, that never learned in battle's rage to yield, breathe terror to the proud aspiring foe, ranging the world, commanding where they go. Therefore, in vain this misproud malcontent threatens her state, whose harm the heavens prevent. Sit safe, sweet nymph, among thy harmless sheep. Thy sacred person angels have in keep.
What meaneth this? I strive and cannot strike. She is preserved by miracle belike. If so, then wherefore threaten we in vain that queen whose cause the gracious heavens maintain?
No marvel, then, although we faint and quail, for mighty is the truth, and will prevail.
And the two malcontents fail to harm our waters, fail to ruin the glory of our land, as protected by our queen and god. Or rather, Astraea and Jove. And that would seem to be it for this yet. No, wait, as the Lord Mayor passes the pageant, in the hinder part of the pageant there sits a child, representing nature, holding in her hand a distaff and spinning a web. Another reference to William Webb, our new Lord Mayor there. Cunning pun work there from George Peel. This thread, as spun, passes through the hand of fortune, and was wheeled up by time, who is aloft, who now speaks as followeth.
Thus, while my wheel with ever-turning gyres, at heaven's high hest, serves earthly men's desires, I wind the web that kind so well begins, while fortune doth enrich what nature spins.
And there we have it. Time and fortune with nature there, spinning a web for our new Lord Mayor, William Webb, as he passes on now to the Guildhall, where he will feast and hold open house. And that's it from this live broadcast of the 1591 Lord Mayor Show, Descensus Astraea, by George Peel. Join us again next year on the 29th of October as we celebrate another Lord Mayor Show. I've been mine host, John, and it's an amen from me. Amen. In the 1591 Lord Mayor Show, you heard the voices of Gillian Horgan, Seb Ranson, Liza Graham, David Ault, Gear Madland, Pamela Flanagan, and Hayden McCabe as the presenter and nymph. Trumpet work was by Matt Byam. 1591 was hosted and produced by myself, Robert Crichton. And now over to our initial exploring session for more expert opinion about how this show was structured, with regular city chronologer Professor Tracy Hill, Gregory Musson, Alex Scott Fairley, and Liza Graham. And of course, me.
Okay, let's nip ahead. It's the next year. So, you know, we get to compare one pageant to another. It's 1591. Descensus Astraea. Help on the pronunciation later. And this is a device of a pageant born before M. William Webb, Mayor William Webb. Just spoiler alert, there may be some web puns coming up. What do we know about William Webb?
Not an awful lot. He was a sorter, which was the same company as Peel and his father. So there's a kind of connection there. He's just a bog standard city oligarch, really. I don't think there's particularly interesting to that about him, as far as I'm aware, anyway. Sorry, Mr. Webb. But his name's good for pageantry, obviously.
Right. Well, let's go to who's presumably still an adult opening the show. The presenter, Liza, will you be our presenter, please?
See, lovely lords, and you, my lord, behold how time hath turned his restless wheel about, and made the silver moon and heaven's bright eye gallop the zodiac and end the year, whose revolution now begets anew the days that have created and confirmed a worthy governor. For London's good to underbear under his sovereign's sway unpartial justice been, and weaved a web For your content and her command in all, you citizens of this metropolis, whose honor and whose oath to gratulate, lordings, behold what emblem I present. Astrea, daughter of the immortal Jove, great Jove, defender of this ancient town, descended of the Trojan Brutus line, offspring of that courageous, conquering king, whose pure renown hath pierced the world's large ears, in golden scrolls rolling about the heavens. Celestial sacred nymph that tends her flock with watchful eyes and keeps this fount in peace. Guarded with graces and with gracious trains, virtues divine and gifts incomparable, nor lets blind superstitious ignorance corrupt so pure a spring. O happy times, that do beget such calm and quiet days, where sheep and shepherd breathe in such content. Honor attends her throne, in her bright eyes sits majesty, virtue and steadfastness possess her heart, sweet mercy sways her sword. Her champion, armed with resolution, sits at her feet to chastise malcontents that threat her honor's rack. And time and kind produce her years to make them numberless, while fortune for her service and her sake with golden hands doth strengthen and enrich the web that they for fair Astrea weave. How long may she live, long may she govern us, in peace triumphant, fortunate in wars, our fair Astrea, our Pandora fair, our fair Eliza, our Zabetta fair, sweet Cynthia's darling, beauteous Cypria's peer, as dear to England and true English hearts as Pompey to the citizens of Rome, as merciful as Caesar in his might, as mighty as the Macedonian king or Trojan Hector, terror to the Greeks. Goddess, live long, whose honors we advance, strengthen thy neighbors, propagate thine own, guide well thy helm, lay thy anointed hand to build the temple of triumphant truth, that while thy subjects draw thy peace from thee, thy friends, with aid of arms, may succored be.
Yes, there's a bit more of a narrative thrust to this one, I think we should point out. This is going somewhere, which is all going to tie in with other stuff. Always nice when they throw in a Trojan Brutus. Always like to hear back to our mythic past. It's all history. It's all real. And setting up again, like the earlier ones, the pageants that are to follow, the images and the additional speeches that are to come, setting up the plot to a degree. I think plot may be an excessive term, but the imagery that we're going to see. How did you find that, presenter?
Well, it was very lovely, and it certainly gave me a strong visual image of the pageant that must have accompanied it. There must have been people, actors, nymphs representing all of these things, like blind, superstitious ignorance, probably sitting there with a blindfold, wondering how long the speech is going to be. Do you know, Tracy, how were these speeches meant to be repeated at intervals as the pageant wagon went to different places?
I'm not aware that they were actually, but probably not. No one's ever asked me that before. You can probably tell. Very interesting question. No, I don't think so. I mean, certainly, you know, later on they tended to have phatic devices where, you know, nobody would have expected to hear the whole thing, so that way, apart from the mayor and his party.
And especially as this opening oration is very, you know, and all of them, I think, have pretty much opened with "My Lord." It's very much he is the audience. And hence the arse licking being quite strong in this one, I feel.
Well, the Virgin Queen's got to get her jollies somewhere. Astrea was often a comparison drawn with Elizabeth. You get that a lot. I've certainly heard her referred to as Eliza quite a bit, but never as Zabita or Zabeta, from the second half of the name Elizabeth, of course. But I don't know if that name means anything. Elizabeth is from Hebrew Elisheva, which means God is my oath, or oath of God, or something like that. So I'm not sure if Zabita or Zabeta has a meaning, or if the poet just wanted to stretch out a line.
Yeah, it sounded good. I'm sure we can find out.
Cynthia's darling, Cynthia is the moon, Cypria's peer, Cypria is Venus, goddess of love. Bit of a bold move starting off with a comparison to Pompey, but then she also gets compared to Caesar and Alexander the Great and Hector of Troy. Basically, she's like all the worthies, all of them.
Yeah, well, of course she is. Other thoughts before we move on into the rest, and we'll go to almost the very end. We'll get to time again. Time's going to turn up. Return of time. After last year, obviously popular. Okay, Liza, I'll keep you as Astraea, we'll move on because there's some. You are very, very close in your estimation of what was going to happen. So I'm pleased.
Thank you. I apologize for not having a sheep or a sheep hook. You guys can be the sheep. Oh, that's such a good sheep. I love that sheep. What is the sheep's name?
Her name is Smudge.
Smudge! Aww. I love you, Smudge. Sending remote scratches to little Smudge.
Cat steals the show again.
Yeah, it's you come for the early modern text, you stay for the cats. I'm used to it now. Anyway, Astraea with her sheep hook on the top of the pageant.
Feed on, my flock, among the gladsome green, where heavenly nectar flows above the banks. Such pastures are not common to be seen. Pay to immortal Jove immortal thanks. For what is good from heaven's high throne doth fall, and heaven's great architect be praised for all.
Superstition, a friar sitting by the fountain. Superstition, Alex.
Stir, priest, and with thy beads poison this spring. I tell thee all is baneful that I bring.
Tracy, as ignorance, also a priest this time.
It is in vain. Her eye keeps me in awe, whose heart is purely fixed on the law, the holy law, and bootless we contend while this chaste nymph this fountain doth defend.
And Greg, Euphrosyne, I'm going with...
I'm glad I didn't have to say it. while on, when Saturn's golden reign did cease, an iron age had kindled cruel wars, envy and wrath perturbing common peace, engendering cankered hate and bloody jars. Lo then, Olympus's king, thundering Jove, wrought hence this gracious nymph Astraea fair. Now once again he sends her from above, descended through the sweet transparent air, and here she sits in beauty fresh and sheen, shadowing the person of a peerless queen.
And Egaliaia, Eliza.
Aglaia, or Aglaia, a peerless queen, a royal princely dame, enrolled in register of eternal fame.
And Alex Thalia.
The muse of comedy, isn't she?
Yes.
The graces throw their balm about her sacred head, whose government her realm's true happiness hath bred.
And charity, Tracy.
That happiness continue in her land. Great Israel's God, spring of all heavenly peace, let thine angels to her rescue stand. With her life's wane done, England's joys decrease. But let her princely days never have fine, whose virtues are immortal and divine.
Greg, hope.
Such virtues as her throne do beautify, and make her honours mount and scale the sky.
And I will read faith, where hope of her eternal bliss doth rest, conceived in her sweet and sacred breast. Liza, honour.
With radiant beams reflecting on the earth, even from the snowy brows of Albion, beyond the utmost verge of Christendom, as bright as is the burning lamp of heaven, shineth my mistress Honor, in whose fame the heathen carols sing and all admire, from icy Tanais to the sevenfold Nile, her glory that commands this western isle.
And Alex, you are champion.
In whose defense my colors I advance, and girt me with my sword and shake my lance. These British lions rampant in this field, that never learned in battle's rage to yield, breathe terror to the proud aspiring foe, ranging the world, commanding where they go. Therefore in vain this misproud malcontent threatens her state, whose harms the heavens prevent. Sit safe, sweet nymph, among thy harmless sheep. Thy sacred person angels have in keep.
And Tracy, first malcontent.
What meaneth this? I strike and cannot strike. She is preserved by miracle, belike. If so, then wherefore threaten we in vain that queen whose cause the gracious heavens maintain?
Greg, second malcontent.
No marvel then, although we faint and quail, for mighty is the truth, and will prevail.
In the hinder part of the pageant did sit a child representing nature, holding in her hand a distaff and spinning a web, which passed through the hand of fortune and was wheeled up by time, who spake as followeth, Liza.
Thus, while my wheel with ever-turning gyres at heaven's high hest serves earthly men's desires, I wind the web that kind so well begins, while fortune doth enrich what nature spins.
And we'll just pause there before we go into the final speech that we have here. You know, it's a good narrative of, you know, Australia's guarding the fountain, guarding the safe space, superstition, ignorance, various people want to get at it, other people saying, no, it's going to be great. It's got a nice dynamism to it as something that you can follow really quite straightforwardly, but it's got bits in it. It's interesting. I don't know if he's repeating this here or somewhere else, but we've got at least one Peel line that's from somewhere else. Snowy brows of Albion, I recognize that well, Hunting of Cupid. And I wonder about Gladsome Green, that rings a bell from somewhere else as well.
Mighty
that
is might the be truth more will prevail as well.
Hmm?
Mighty is the truth and will prevail as well.
Hmm.
That crops up in other places.
Yeah. So, is he recycling it for the pageants, or is he popular lines? Snowy Brows of Albion is something that, for some reason, has been stuck in my head for days. Before I even noticed it was here, so I like that. So, thoughts.
Yeah, it's interesting what you were saying. It's shifted again to something that has a bit more narrative content to it, or it's a really interesting sort of like linear narrative, like, because obviously the characters don't really interact or repeat. It's like they're just a little chain of characters who all have a relationship to the next one on, which is quite pleasing. It's sort of weird that there's Faith, Hope and Charity, but then we get sort of one of the muses thrown in, and then Euphrosyne, who I think was a grace as well as being Oh, no, I'm wrong, sorry. According to Hesiod, Euphrosyne and her sisters Thalia and Aglaia were daughters of Zeus and the Oceania Eurynome. So I'm wrong. He is entirely right to include the three of those. I take it back. I withdraw it.
You were maligning Peel.
but you're absolutely right. Thalia was was also the name of the muse of comedy. So you were right.
Mm. Yes, she's not very funny there. So she's having an off day if she's supposed to be muse of comedy.
It's all in the delivery.
Yeah. Spinning of a literal web for the thing for web, you know, they're subtle. I love it.
It's nice as well in this one that there's, like, in the first one they didn't seem, everything was kind of milk and honey in the first one, and then in the second one there was that sort of ambition character who sort of cackled in a corner but then did nothing, whereas in this there do seem to be, even though they're sort of staved off, like Tracy was saying earlier, more threats. There's the malcontents and the kind of poisonous well, and the kind of something outside is threatening to come in. which I didn't really get in the first one.
Yeah, you get this foreign friars, you know, you expect them to be, probably at this point, Spanish.
He's poisoning the spring with his beads. That's like how anti-Catholic we're getting.
Yeah. Okay, we've got one tiny little bit left to go, which the question of placement here is interesting, because it looks to me, I think we've had this discussion before, Tracy, I don't know if you agree with me, I suspect you don't, but it says, a speech on the water delivered in the morning at my Lord Mayor's going to Westminster. So though we've read this last, it looks to me like this actually should live at the beginning. But that it just got printed here because it was separate. So this is another speech, possibly from an entirely separate part of the day. Answers on a postcard debate at the end. Greg, I think it's your turn to do a horribly long speech. There you go.
List, gentle lords, and bubbling stream, be still, and whistling winds, your angry murmur cease. Let Thetis's nymph unfold the goddess. Let Thetis's nymph unfold the goddess's hest. Behold, embarked thus bravely as you see, laden with treasure and with precious ore. For where in Tellus's veins the parching sun doth gold and glittering minerals create, are come these strangers lovingly inflamed to gratulate to you, my lovely lord, this gladsome day wherein your honours spring. And by the bard thwarts this silver stream, even to the beauteous verge of Troy Noyant, that decks this Thamesis on either side, thus far these friends have pierced, and all by me, salute your honour and your company, thrice worthy praetor of this ancient town. The mortar of these walls, tempered in peace, yet holds the building sure, as are the sprigs woven from the spreading root in knotty box. Labour, fair lord, as other mayors of yore, to beautify this city with deserts. So, with these friendly strangers, man by man, pass with advisement to receive thy oath. Keep it inviolate for thy sovereign's hope, virtue's pure mirror, London's great mistress. Unsheathe the sword committed to thy sway with merciful regard of every cause. So go in peace, happy by sea and land. Guided by grace and heaven's immortal hand.
Hello, we have run out of text for this session. I quite like the list to the bubbling stream and whistling winds, your angry murmur cease. After a curry, that is a thought that I'm sure we have all had. sorry, just lowering the tone there, I think, at the end of the session. Any thoughts about that, or for that matter, all of the pieces that we've done? We're very much into extra time. We've run a little later than planned, but general thoughts from the room about where we are.
And they're really fascinating to me because they're not really a form that I've ever explored before. And they're sort of weirdly dramatic and undramatic in strange ways. Like for me, actually, the most fascinating bit, I think, is the bit that's probably the worst written, which is the injunction not to eat fish on a Sabbath, because it's brilliant. It's just a bit of advertisement thrown in there amongst all of this, but done really... really interesting, I think, because it sort of tells me something about society that I don't know at this point. Like, I'm impressed how much mileage that last one got out of what is a very static kind of form in some ways, like almost like a tableau vivant where people don't really interact and characters don't come back to one another, that actually the relationships it drew. But I think that the sort of the one that pleased me most in terms of poetry, maybe, and in terms of what it would mean to deliver that, is probably the first one, the Peel one at the beginning. But it's really interesting putting those three in chronological order and seeing that, like it's really interesting because, as I've confessed numerous times, my English history is my British history is terrible. Like Tracy said about the sort of gathering threats and things sort of slightly going downhill, that there is no heir and that sort of creeping darkness sort of coming in from outside. But yeah, they're really fascinating to me because they're not a form I know anything about, and I don't really know much about Lord Mayor's pageants and processions these days. But I don't think you get all this, do you? I don't think there's a lot.
Poetry
speaking, it's more sort of like steel bands and dancers these days, yeah. Isn't it? I don't know.
It's yeah, all that's gone. Really, I was very disappointed the first time I saw one. Actually, expecting it to be pageantry as such, but you know, 400 years later, but there wasn't.
It's really fascinating. I'm wondering if there's something you could do that would be a modern equivalent of this. And particularly, I think that's why the Sabbath bit, the Don't You Fish on the Sabbath, I love that it's sort of crammed in there cheek by jowl with these incredibly well-turned-out classical references and things.
Well, one of the hopes we've got is that as we go further into the later ones where the form does develop and do lots of, you know, in many ways, these are the simplest of the texts that we're looking at here.
Right.
You know, and, you know, there's a lot of development to come. And the other reason why I was looking at slightly different civic pageantry last time with, you know, some medieval stuff was just the sense of a continuum, but also difference. And starting to build up that picture exciting, he said.
I think that's what's interesting about this as well. It's sort of like reminded me of, you know, all these accounts you read of Greek theatre of like there was one person on the stage and then someone thought to put two people on the stage and have them talk together and then someone put a third one in. And actually what that must have done to the structure of drama, that this sort of reminded me slightly of kind of we're going towards building a narrative between the characters that we have on the stage. Yeah.
Liza, any final thoughts from you?
Well, firstly, that this is better poetry than I was expecting, or better writing in general than I was expecting. You know, it seems the guild guys paid enough to mostly get decent poets, and I hope they got good actors as well. And I hope everyone involved got paid really well, at least enough to drink and get some, I don't know, fish. And just a note about fish days. You're right, Alex, that it was a Sabbath thing, that it was a Friday thing. But fish day, there were a lot more fish days than that. All of Lent except Sundays were fish days, which I think is about 6 weeks, as is all of Advent, because you're supposed to starve yourself and deprive yourself before the blowout of Christmas. And there's a few other like penitential days where you're supposed to feel terrible about yourself and eat fish.
Wow.
and for some that's good, doing God's work, and for others it's a business opportunity, which, you know, this really shows. Greg, any final thoughts from you?
No, another fabulously interesting lot though.
And Tracy, Liza just briefly mentioned money, but you know, people getting paid. It's a sense that the person who runs the show has to sort of bid, or you know, put their tender in. Is that the best way of putting it? So it's a sort of job lot.
Yeah, it certainly becomes more like that in the 17th century. I mean, generally speaking, you get little sort of creative teams pitching to the companies, delivery companies, they will kind of knock them down a bit. They get quite a lot of money. I mean, it compares extremely well to what you get for writing a play for the playhouses. But of course, a lot of that is subcontracted out to, you know, people doing costumes and so on, and buying the children breakfast and stuff. But it probably still was quite lucrative, and it was certainly very prestigious. You know, it's such a massive event. Yeah.
And one of the other final things is to note is we're not really sure who the printing of these pageants was for. Why we have these pageants. It's not quite clear precisely who they were printed for or why they gave it to be.
There's the courtesy to tell us, you know, in the period, like, oh, of course we did this because of this, and you know, but they didn't. So this is the question. It's always the question, you know, were they printed in large numbers? Probably not. A couple of hundred, maybe 400. Were they handed out on the day? Quite probably. Were they used as programs? Possibly. Were they souvenirs? Possibly. They don't survive in any great numbers. I only think that possibly the answer is that it varied. Mm. Bit of a cop out, but I think that's probably what happened.
Mm. Well, I'm guessing the market for them might have been people who were, for example, people who were present but not within sight of the pageants, but not within hearing of the speakers. You could have your, your hawker outside St. Paul's or wherever the booksellers were. You could have your hawker with a basket of these going,
Yeah, I think somebody made a very good point to me at a conference once that if you bring home a program for a theatre performance or something, you're not like to look at it again. You're just going to sort of stash it. So I think that's kind of interesting. I mean, there's not much evidence that anybody sort of commented on their copies or anything like that. They start getting collected, but later in the 17th century, people start collecting them. And they categorise in all sorts of different ways, which is very interesting, clearly. But people did regard them as being A, political, even if it's only very low-scale political, and also B, dramatic. So we've seen both of those two things very strongly, I think, tonight. It's really good. Hmm.
Yes, and as we go into the 17th century, which we will be sometime anon, we will see we do have quite a good selection that survived from there. We don't have many from, this is basically it for the 16th century, but we do a lot better and a lot longer in some cases as well. There's a lot more text for
right. Lots of them. Right.
So, unless anyone has any final thoughts, I will close by thanking everyone for reading today, and we will return. There will be more civic pageantry sometime in the future. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
And many thanks to Gregory Musson, Alex Scott-Fairley, Liza Graham, and Professor Tracy Hill for their reading and discussion of those texts. All our exploring sessions on civic pageantry is available on our YouTube channel, and other Lord Mayor stuff can be found on the podcast and on our website. Links are all in the show description. If you've enjoyed this episode, why not throw us a coffee on ko-fi.com/beyondshakespeare? Or you can regularly support us on our Patreon feed, where you get early access to materials, as well as bonus and exclusive material too. We release at least 9 separate things on the Patreon feed each month, many of which are early access, but some are exclusive, depending on which tier you are on. That's patreon.com/beyondshakespeare. Links are all in the show description. Till next time, goodbye.